AFR app is a powerful tool, but it does have limitations. You can't use it to change the oil in your vehicle or get rid of carpet stains. It won't walk the dog, won't pick up the dry cleaning, or take the kids to practice. But while you're doing those things, you can listen to your favorite AFR content through the app on your phone, smart device, or Roku. Just go to your app store or visit AFR.net. Listen to AFR wherever you go with the AFR app.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good Wednesday morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a good morning. I wanted to read to you from Psalm 29, a Psalm of David. He says this, "Ascribe to the Lord, O sons of the mighty, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Worship the Lord in holy array. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord is over many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is majestic. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. Yes, the Lord breaks in pieces the cedars of Lebanon. He makes Lebanon skip like a calf and Sirion like a wild ox. The voice of the Lord hews out flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. The Lord shakes the wilderness of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord makes the deer to calf and strips the forest bare. And in his temple, everything says glory. The Lord sat as king at the flood. Yes, the Lord sits as king forever. The Lord will give strength to his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace." Well, the Lord is in control, and we don't need to fear. As the Bible says, God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. Now, there are lots of things going on in the world, but we don't need to be afraid. We need to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. We need to be aware of what's going on in our world so that we can be salt and light. But we need to know that God is ultimately in control. Now, I do want to talk about current events today, and I've invited my good friend Rod Martin, founder and CEO of Martin Capital, a philosopher, capitalist, anti-communist, Christian who loves the Lord, all-around good guy. And what I love about Rod Martin, he has such tremendous insights on things. And so, Rod, welcome again to the program.
Great to be here.
All right, Rod, I want to get right into it. The war in Iran, this thing changes very rapidly, where it looks like, you know, we're annihilating them right off the bat. We kill their supreme leader. Looks like this isn't going to last long, but they seem to be like a cat that has nine lives. They keep coming back with no air force, no navy, but then they control the Strait of Hormuz and they seem to control the negotiation talks. So let me ask you, I want you to give me your update on it, but do you think this is a quagmire that if we could go back in time, we would say we shouldn't have done it?
Well, first of all, it's a little hard for anything that's lasted less than 60 days to be a quagmire. I mean, Vietnam, depending on how you want to count it, was 8 years or almost 20. Afghanistan was 20. Iraq was similar. And even there, you know, if Joe Biden hadn't thrown Afghanistan away, we actually would have been successful there. We had some reasonable degree of success in Iraq. We had a lot of success in South Vietnam and then threw that away after we won it. So, you know, those are the classic quagmires. This hasn't even been 2 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are we looking at? Well, we're looking at a 90% drop in the number of missiles they're able to fire. We've destroyed all the factories where they make them. The Chinese were about to ship them some more air defenses, which is an exercise in futility. I guess the Chinese just wanted to make money because we're just going to destroy them again, as we already did. Both the Chinese and Russian air defense systems in both Iran and Venezuela we took out in a matter of minutes to hours, depending on the site. So there's nothing here except the reality that this is a large country we have not invaded. There's not any American boots on the ground in Iran, and there aren't gonna be unless it's some just very small targeted operation against something like Karg Island or something, which is far off the mainland. That's not an invasion. That's an economic action. And the truth is, we don't have to. You know, there has been all this talk of Iran controlling the strait. Iran never controlled the strait. Iran was able to threaten passage through the strait sufficiently that the insurance companies quit insuring oil tankers to go through the strait. Could they have gone? Yeah, probably, but it wasn't commercially viable. Well, we just completely flipped the script on that too, because we are now blockading Iran's ports. We're seeing significant uptick in traffic from the other Gulf states. We transited multiple warships through the strait the other day without incident. We are clamping down. And and again, the Chinese just announced, well, we're not going to send them any arms after all. And oh, by the way, looking forward to that summit with Trump. So this is just not going the way CNN wants it to go at all. And the question now is, will we get to a point where the Iranian people can successfully rise, be the boots on the ground, and overthrow their oppressive regime?
So, Rod, do you think that anything less than a regime change would be a defeat?
Well, goodness, no. I mean, from a U.S. perspective, our main aims had to do with military considerations. One of those is eliminating this whole longstanding threat that Iran has been making since the 80s toward the Strait of Hormuz. You know, they have constantly held the world hostage. If you do anything to us, we will close the strait. That'll shut off 20% of the world's oil. Well, no, it won't. It will for maybe a few weeks because of the insurance consideration. But we've sunk the Iranian Navy. You know, we've destroyed the factories where they build the mines they would put in the strait. And honestly, if it went on long enough, it's a dumb threat because you can really only use it once. The Saudis have shifted 7 million barrels a day from the Ras Tanura terminal in the Persian Gulf across the East-West pipeline to the Red Sea. Iran can't do anything meaningful about that. The UAE is talking about a pipeline across Oman that bypasses the strait. There's a lot of talk of a new pipeline for the GCC generally that would cross Israel. That completely bypasses anything Iran can do. So it's just a dumb thing that they did. Alleviating that probably reduces the long-term price of oil by $10 to $20 a barrel. But that isn't even the biggest threat. We can handle that. That makes money for Texas on a certain level. What we have to do is prevent them from building up what they were absolutely bragging about building up, which is a force over the next 2 to 3 years of 20,000 ballistic missiles. Well, why on earth would you do that? That's more missiles than lots of much bigger countries have. Well, you do it to completely overwhelm the air defenses of Israel, of the Gulf states, and ultimately the United States. It's just too much incoming to be able to shoot down. And they were going for it, they were building it, they were bragging about it, and what they were lying about was that they already had an intermediate range ballistic missile capacity that could threaten London, Paris, and Berlin. So the Europeans were very foolish in their points about this. And that IRBM capacity in a country that has orbited a satellite is just a half step from an ICBM that can hit Washington or Kansas City or San Diego. So that was the crucial threat that had to be eliminated, and militarily we have done that, and that's a win. However, from my point of view, I want to see a free Iran. And mm-hmm. I believe that we can get there. And I believe we don't have to have troops on the ground, because what we're able to do now with drone strikes on individual IRGC members, just, you know, manning checkpoints in the streets, things like that. We're taking these guys out like crazy. And the net result is you get to a point where 93 million Iranians can actually, not safely, but without the likelihood of just a mass slaughter, rise up and overthrow their government. And, mm-hmm. and that would be a huge win for the world. But we can win this militarily without any of that happening.
Well, Rod, when we think about like Hamas, you know, the people in Israel are like, if Hamas stays in power in Gaza, they're just going to do this again. So you can decimate them, but they just keep coming back. That's what I was thinking about with Iran. If there's not a regime change, if the you know, radical Muslims stay in power, but get decimated, they'll just rebuild, and we're going to be facing this again down the road.
Well, clearly a full and final solution to this problem is preferable, but we're not willing to invade Iran to get there. I mean, we're just not. We're not yeah. going to send 250,000 troops into Khuzestan and march through the mountains toward Tehran. That's just not going to happen. So can we get it to the point where the people can do something about their problem? I think so. And I think that will actually happen. If it doesn't, okay, we solved this problem for 10 or 20 years. We may have to fight it again. We had to fight the Germans again in the first part of the 20th century. Right. That doesn't mean we lost World War I. Right, and the American tendency to assume that everything has to have a movie ending is just historically wrong. This is a huge triumph, even if we stopped today, and we're not going to.
Yeah. Well, so pull out your crystal ball and tell us how you think this is going to go in the next few days, the next weeks, the next months. You see this ending soon?
Well, I can do better than a crystal ball. I can quote you crude oil prices. We were at about $119 at the peak. Now we're at about $91. That's extraordinary. And actually for WTI, that's down $4 a barrel since yesterday. So, I mean, clearly markets see that this is going differently than MS Now would have you believe. Right. And so that's a big part of it. The second part of it is, as the blockade really takes hold, it cuts off the Iranian regime's ability to pay its bills. And what sparked all this in the first place in December was an economic collapse. Their currency dropped to basically zero. Their banking system just shut down. And so they can't pay their people. At some point, that has a significant effect on how willing you are to, you know, go out in the streets and die to murder a bunch of peaceful protesters. So you have a serious, serious problem there as we dry up the last money they were making. And that's without taking Karg Island, where 90% of Iran's exports flow through. Without putting a single soldier on that island, we've pretty well shut down their exports. And if you don't think we're willing to actually make it stick, yesterday the blockade turned back two Chinese oil tankers without incident. And if there had been an incident, we just would have seized the tankers, so, and taken their cargo and sent the ships on their way. So the U.S. Navy is more than capable of strangling Iran. And crucially, and this is the point I've been making for the last 2 weeks, a two-week ceasefire? Why a two-week ceasefire? Well, that's simple, because in that window, we get the USS Ford's carrier strike group back on station in the Red Sea. We get the USS Bush's carrier strike group on station in the Eastern Med. And we get the USS Boxer and its Marine Expeditionary Unit and its F-35s in the Middle East. So we are closing the vice.
Very good. Well, we're talking to My friend Rod Martin, founder and CEO of Martin Capital. Rod has a great perspective on world events, what's going on in America, how that affects the world. Rod loves the Lord, hates communism, which is always a plus, Rod. And so we're talking about current events. We're talking about Iran. We're going to come back and talk about Rod's favorite politician, Eric Swalwell, and other things, the SAVE Act and prosecuting fraud, all these things that have been big in the news, but, you know, jockeying for time. The Swalwell thing is very hot in the news right now, and so we're going to get his take on that. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We'll be right back after the break. Don't go away.
Candace talks about finding out she was pregnant. Thankfully, an ultrasound provided by Preborn allowed her to hear her baby's heartbeat.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
Preborn currently has clinics that do not have ultrasound machines. Would you consider a leadership gift and sponsor a machine today? These life-saving machines cost $15,000, more than most centers can afford. Your donation will save countless lives for years to come. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here with my friend Rod Martin. We're talking about current events. And let me just say before we jump back in, you heard the clip Roots to Fruit, July 16th through the 18th. I will be there and my wife will be there. We're looking forward to meeting and greeting and getting to know all the folks and having a great time together. So check it out, afa.net/summit, afa.net/summit. It'd be a great conference for you and your whole family. Okay, Rod, so I had mentioned about Eric Swalwell, and I ran across this clip by Victor Davis Hanson, who always makes a lot of sense in his evaluations of things. I want to play this and get you to comment on it. So here we go.
So what happened to Eric Swalwell? Well, on April 10th, his world blew up because suddenly, out of the blue, some of his congressional staffers, all female, came forward. And one of them said that she was raped by Eric Swalwell while intoxicated on two occasions. Another one said she was sexually assaulted. Another two or three said that he had a bad habit of forcing congressional women, many of them 20 years younger than he was, to sign non-disclosure forms so that they could not voice what he had done to them. And he had chronically, insidiously, sexually harassed them. Now, the latest bombshell is people on his gubernatorial campaign staff have said that they believe that these charges are true, and some of them have resigned. And that's made a this made a great controversy the last few days in California. There were other even more disturbing, in Anthony Weiner style, there were women who had been receiving text from Eric Swalwell allegedly showing his genitalia, something like Anthony Weiner did that destroyed his congressional career. There were also stories that he was using campaign funds for his own child care. He has been married twice. His present second wife, they have three children, but reportedly he was improperly using campaign funds. Well, why did this come up right now? Some of the stuff dates back to 2015 and 16, and apparently it was widely known among California politicos, both nationwide and in California, that he had been a serial sexual harasser, and yet no one came forward. The answer is analogous to Joe Biden. People knew in 2020 that he was non compos mentis, but they used him as a waxen effigy because the other candidates were not viable. And once he was elected, by staying in the basement, the Obama era politicos took over his government, and we essentially had the most left-wing administration in modern history.
All right, Rod. It sounds like the Democrats just have this machine going. They're looking at pieces, and it's like, okay, I can't use that guy anymore, so we just throw him to the wolves. We've known this about him for a long time, but he's not any use to us anymore. We don't care what happens to him. Did you agree with Hansen's summation of that?
Well, that's all right, but it's not the whole story. The rest of the story is he is a serious contender, or he was a serious contender for governor of California, and he has rivals in that race. He was not the anointed Democrat candidate. He's running against Democrats, and all of a sudden, there's not really a lot of point for them to protect Eric Swalwell. So there were a lot of Democrats who wanted rid of him, and they actually are a little concerned that they could lose in November. I don't know that there's a lot of reason for them to be concerned about that, but it's always wise in a political campaign to cover the downside. Steve Hilton would be a nightmare for Democrats if he were elected governor of California. So yeah, it was time to just blow him up. And he isn't useful in Congress anymore because he's stepping down from Congress. He's running for governor. So, you know, what do you do with all that? Well, the Babylon Bee laid it out, I thought, pretty well with their, you know, fake news you can trust headline that said, Swalwell denies raping all those Chinese spies he slept with. And, you know, this is the problem. Swalwell has had this longtime affair with Fang Fang, you know, who it turns out to be a CCP spy. He is a walking in just security leak. There's no end to it. He's also pretty reprehensible and dishonest and has pulled some tremendous stunts in Congress, but that served Democrat interests. This suddenly puts him in a rivalry with other Democrats. And so, you know, they have stuff on him. They used it.
Mm-hmm. Do the Republicans do the same thing where they're just like, hey, we want this person to win, or this person has too much baggage, so we're going to throw them out to the wolves? You know, you get this cabal. It seems like you got this cabal on the left that determines who's doing what. Just like he said, we pick Joe Biden because we think we can win with Uncle Joe, even though he's incapable of being the president. It doesn't matter. You could have a sock puppet run on the left and they'd still vote for him. Doesn't seem to be that way on the right, but correct me if I'm wrong. Is it like that on the right?
Well, you get a little of it because people are people. They all have a sin nature and, you know, they all want what they want. So you can find instances of this anywhere, but the truth is, we actually do a pretty good job of cleaning house. I mean, that was the story in 2006, so 20 years ago. We had a congressman here in Florida who was accused, turned out actually wrongly accused, of having sexually abused young male interns. And he actually was sleeping with staffers and such. So he was a sexual harasser, but it turned out he wasn't actually a sexual abuser. And Congress reacted to this just dramatically. The Republicans tossed him out of Congress, made such a big deal of it that it meaningfully contributed to the Republicans losing the House and the Senate, because they were actually morally outraged by what this guy appeared to have done and the things he actually did also. Well, you don't see that on the left, and your Biden example is spot on. Biden was obviously a vegetable in 2020. All you had to do was listen to him or go to one of his rallies where he had like 8 or 12 people show up. There was more press than people. He campaigns from his basement. Everything is controlled. Everything is scripted. Why? Well, honestly, because the Democrats had just had a president who went off script and did things that aren't acceptable to the Beltway uniparty establishment, and certainly not to the deep state. And people think, what's the deep state? Well, the deep state's simple. There's one president elected. He gets to appoint about 5,000 officials in the entire U.S. government. And there were, when Donald Trump came back into office last year, 2.8 million federal employees with power to make policy and just go their own way, people that the president basically can't fire. So the entrenched bureaucratic interests, that deep state, wanted somebody they could control, and they wanted a free rein to do whatever the heck they wanted to do. And you saw that for 4 years. It was incredibly left-wing. It was significantly to the left of who Joe Biden was for most of his 50-year political career. He was never a moderate. We shouldn't ever claim that. But he certainly wasn't as far left as AOC and Bernie Sanders, but his administration absolutely was. And that's because he simply wasn't running the store. The auto pen was running the store. And that investigation is ongoing. I believe we're going to find that people improperly used the auto pen, that constitutes forgery, and that a number of things Joe Biden purported to do weren't done by the president and therefore have no legal validity.
Let me ask you this, Rod. We were hearing so much about the SAVE Act and then, you know, TSA and all the votes in the Senate, and they are voting against, you know, funding HSA. And then it just seems we don't hear about that anymore. It's not front page news anymore. Where do we stand on those things?
Well, that's mostly because of the war. You know, the war is sucking all the oxygen out of the room, and rightly so. The president is as committed to the Save America Act as ever. I think it is a no-brainer that we should have the same safeguards for voting that we have for buying cough syrup or getting pulled over for speeding or going to the airport. The idea that black people somehow can't get a photo ID is just absurd. Find me a black person in America. Find me an illegal alien in America who doesn't have a photo ID. It's ridiculous. And by the way, in lots of states, like here in Florida, we'll actually give you a government-issued photo ID if you can't afford one. So you know, the idea that this is racist is just silly. And everybody knows it. Depending on the poll, between 80 and 90% of Americans want voter ID. This is beyond an 80-20 issue. The president's on the right side of it. The problem, of course, in the Senate is that you would have to do something that changes the rules as they have operated for the last several decades. That doesn't mean getting rid of the filibuster. You don't have to do that. But you would at least have to force these guys to have a talking filibuster. We don't know how long that would go on, but it absolutely would tie up the Senate, potentially for months, unable to do any other business. And John Thune is very, very concerned about that. He's also concerned that if the Democrats come back into power at some point, which of course they will, that they would just nuke the filibuster at that point and you know, make Puerto Rico and D.C. a state so they can get four new Democrat senators. And that's the real hangup. But can we get there? Yeah, I think we probably can. And the president's still very committed to it.
Well, the nuking the filibuster, if the Democrats are probably going to do that if they get back in power anyway.
Yeah.
Why are we so hesitant to, we can't do that? They're going to do it, and we need to get some things passed. And it seems like we spin our wheels just, you know, with this stuff constantly, when we could just say, yeah, we're going to go majority and get this stuff going.
Well, conservatives tend to be cautious by definition. So, you know, there is some awareness that when Harry Reid, who was the Democrat Senate Majority Leader not very long ago, removed the filibuster as a consideration in confirmation of federal appellate judges. Well, Mitch McConnell, you know, when the Republicans came back in power, immediately extended that to Supreme Court justices, and the result has been not one, but three Trump Supreme Court appointments and the first conservative Supreme Court majority in 100 years. So that's actually on their mind. They're aware that very bad things could happen if the filibuster is gone. On the other hand, I'm with you. The Democrats are going to do this. The Democrats have had enough of actually treating the Senate as a collegial body, right, where we come to consensus and we work things out. They're going to ram it all through if they can. So it's important to remember the founding fathers didn't invent the filibuster. It's not in the Constitution. That's a Senate rule. And it's been changed repeatedly over two plus centuries, in most recently in 1975. So it can be changed again. You don't have to get rid of it. You just have to make them actually stand up and talk like they had to before Mike Mansfield changed the rules in the 70s. And by the way, we've done that for centuries. The longest filibuster on record, you may recall, was the Democrat filibuster in 1964 against the Civil Rights Act. Longest filibuster in history. The Southern Democrats did everything in their power to keep black people segregated and second-class citizens. That's who these people are, and that's what they're doing now. What is the difference between Jim Crow and rigging elections such that American votes are diluted by people who aren't entitled to vote, whether they're American citizens who vote six times or they're ballot harvesters who turn in 500 fake ballots or they're illegal aliens who are voting in a U.S. election? All of that is fraud. And everybody understands it. This is a 90-10 issue. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows you need an ID to vote. And the fact that these folks will actually stand against that in the face of vast majorities of the Democrat Party saying they want voter ID tells you how addicted they are to the corruption.
Mm. Let me ask you real quick. We got about a minute and a half before break. Kristi Noem, replacing her with Mark Wayne Mullen. Did you think that was a good move?
Yeah, it's the right move. She shouldn't have done what she did. I mean, there's the sexual scandal, of course, which, you know, some of it is true. Some of it isn't her fault. Some of it may not be true. Don't know. But that wasn't really the thing. The thing was the $250 million in advertising that not only did she pay for with taxpayer money that she probably shouldn't have, but she funneled that business to a buddy's consulting firm and then said the president had okayed it before the Senate, and the president had not okayed that. So she got the axe, but she didn't get humiliated. She got kicked into a new position. Much like Mike Waltz got moved from National Security Advisor to UN Ambassador, that's not a bad thing. And so there are consequences, but it wasn't a death penalty.
We're talking to Rod Martin. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. When we come back from the break, we'll be taking your calls, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. If you have a question for Rod or a comment, we'd love to hear from you, so give us a call. Let's talk.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking to my friend Rod Martin. We're talking about current events and what's going on with the war in Iran, and Eric Swalwell, the SAVE Act, prosecuting fraud, things like that that are so important. But Rod, as we were talking at the break, President Trump got himself into a lot of trouble by posting. First, he's in this feud with the Pope, which I mean, I don't agree with the Pope, but I just don't think it's in Donald Trump's best interest to be going after the Pope on social media. But then right on the heels of that, he posts that meme of him looking like Jesus, healing somebody. That created quite a stir, and Christians, this is blasphemous. And to his credit, he took it down. But What do you think goes on in his head when it comes to things like that, that would be such a no-brainer to the rest of us? Don't post that.
Well, Donald Trump is not a regular attendee of a Baptist Sunday school. He's thinking about this politically. Politically, the point of the meme was that what he's doing is healing America, which is completely consistent with everything else he's doing and saying. So that made sense to him. It wasn't his meme. It was actually a meme created by Nick Adams and posted back in February with, you know, little hubbub. He thought it was okay. He thought it was funny, I'm sure. And to his great credit, he did take it down. And I want to credit some other people who may not be deserving of it, but I'm pretty sure they are. There has been criticism of guys like Robert Jeffress and Franklin Graham and Jim Garlow. You know, why haven't they condemned the president in public? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, sometimes your spiritual advice is better given over the phone than on Twitter. I mean, that would be the obvious thing. Clearly somebody talked to him and he took it down. That tells you that he listened, which he frequently doesn't when it comes to this kind of thing. And he almost never backs off of a position once he takes it. Here, he just quietly took it down. So I think, you know, the right people said the right things and he had a heart to listen. And he just, it was just a bad judgment. You can't get everything right.
Right. You know, Rod, I was talking to Erwin Lutzer and he likens Trump to Nebuchadnezzar. And I think that's probably a fair, you know, comparison. But one of the things I was thinking today, one of the things that's interesting about that, Daniel had such impact in Nebuchadnezzar's life. Daniel never criticized Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 3 has an image to himself, and you bow down and worship this image. I mean, you know, he's Trump on steroids. And Daniel never condemns him for that. He doesn't rail against him. Daniel cares about Nebuchadnezzar, and because of Daniel's witness and obviously what God did in Nebuchadnezzar's life, he seems to put his faith and trust in the God of the Bible, in the God of Israel. And as I asked Erwin Lutzer, I said, do you think we'll see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven? He said, yes, I do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the rest of that story, you know, God consistently refers to my servant, Nebuchadnezzar. You know, he has raised up Nebuchadnezzar to do his will, even though Nebuchadnezzar is a pagan unbeliever. And then in the end, I think any fair reading of Daniel chapter 4 requires you to see that Nebuchadnezzar was saved in the end, not saved all along. God saved him in the end. And mm-hmm. And by the way, Second Chronicles, we see the same thing with Judah's most wicked king, Manasseh. Yeah. God saves Manasseh in the end. So we should pray for the president. I don't know his spiritual state. I don't have access to the Lamb's Book of Life. If I were guessing, I'd say we ought to preach the gospel to him. For the same reason we ought to preach the gospel to everybody in our churches, a bunch of them are probably going to hell too. And everybody would do better if they were reminded of the glorious grace that Christ alone provides. So we should always preach the gospel at all times, and certainly to our leaders, certainly to Donald Trump. And I have great hopes for his future as well.
Rod, let me ask you this, because Trump is, he is without a doubt the most consequential president in our lifetime, bar none. I mean, even as great a president as Ronald Reagan was, Trump is getting more done than anyone has ever gotten done. I mean, he's a businessman, not a politician. Why do you think he doesn't say to himself, you know, I need to have a team of people where I run these things through before I post them out there? Or do you think he does it on purpose because he says, oh, I need to start a fire over here so I can do something, you know, over at this other side?
Trump knows that his posting is part of why he became president in the first place. He knows that it's a channel of communication that goes completely around the media. He also knows that it completely refocuses the media on what he wants them focused on whenever he chooses to do it. And if you have that attitude, you're going to put a bunch of stuff out and some of it isn't going to work. You know, you have comedians with the same problem. They do a stand-up routine and 90% of their jokes are great and a couple get booed. And that's exactly where the president is. And I have to say, Ronald Reagan might have done something more like this if the internet had existed. You know, we think of him as a much more steady and grandfatherly presence. I would say that he was pretty consequential in that he completely remade the American economy and restored American pride and saved us from Soviet domination. But I think what Trump is doing now has potential to be equally consequential. He's certainly the best president we've had since Reagan. I would contend that Reagan's one of the three best presidents we've ever had in American history, with Washington and Lincoln. And, you know, what Trump is doing, just in sheer volume, is staggering. He outworks everybody. He outworks everybody on his own staff, and they're hard workers. And he outworks every president in American history. There is not a single year of an American presidency to compare to the first 12 months of Donald Trump's second term. So he is a force of nature, no question about it. God is using that mightily, I think, in lots of ways. And the consequences are very real. So, you know, just not to get into a big, long list, because the list is really long. You don't have enough time for that list in multiple shows. But we've eliminated 139 federal regulations for every one new one. We've eliminated trillions of dollars of regulatory burden that was drowning the American economy. Biggest tax cut in American history. And if the Big Beautiful Bill hadn't been passed, all of those tax cuts from 2017 would have gone away and we would have had the biggest tax hike in American history, and on and on and on. $18 trillion of new investment into the United States from overseas instead of us paying for other people. That's amazing. That's two-thirds of the American economy, and he rounds it up in the first few months of his term. So, I mean, we just couldn't possibly cover it all. And, oh, did I mention that we overturned Roe v. Wade, which absolutely everybody believed would never happen. Right. So just from beginning to end, it's an amazing presidency. The Lord is using it powerfully, I believe. And I am very hopeful, and I pray every single day that if Donald Trump isn't saved, and probably isn't, that God will save him. And I am hopeful that he will.
Amen to that. Well, we're going to the phone lines, 888-589-8840. And we have John on the line from Virginia. John, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Thank you, Pastor Jeff. I love the show, and Rod, your insight's amazing. I live up in Northern Virginia. In less than a week, we got this vote coming up on redistricting our state, and right now we're six Democratic Congress people and five Republican. They're trying to redistrict, so we end up with supposedly 10 Democrats and one Republican. I mean, we're close to a 50-50 state. They say more Democrats. But my question is, with this gerrymandering, where they're taking little slices of Northern Virginia with hundreds of thousands of voters and spreading it over rural Virginia, aren't the Democrats, might they be shooting themselves in the foot? Because they're creating razor-thin margins, or maybe. And with the SAVE Act, if we get legitimate votes out there, I mean, might they be creating a situation where this gerrymandering backfires?
Yes, and that's very insightful. I mean, what they're trying to do is just really terrible. And you guys gotta defeat it. It's just a terrible, terrible thing that they're gonna do. They're gonna disenfranchise large chunks of Virginia, which, you know, is the capstone on a long-term plan, not unlike how the Democrats flipped Colorado, that has keyed on just hiring an insane number of federal workers and making sure they all live in Northern Virginia and flip the state blue. And then, you know, this becomes the capstone of that. So for heaven's sake, please defeat it. But you're not wrong. You know, whatever happens, we know from Isaac Newton, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And there's a real opportunity to shift these states that experience this. Louisiana is the perfect example. You know, you had just an obscenely corrupt electoral system in Louisiana for decades. And yet, when the Republicans hit a certain critical mass, they were able to undo that and overturn that. And that's a pretty solid red state now. So I'm hopeful that Virginia could be back in the R column in a reasonable amount of time. And if you guys beat this, it'll happen quicker. If you don't beat it, I think it'll happen anyway. Just take a little longer.
Thank you, John. That was a good question. We have Tim on the line from North Carolina. Tim, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Thank you, Pastor Jeff. I really enjoyed the program, and I always enjoy when Mr. Martin's on and his insight. I've got a two-part question, I guess you'd say, and you're talking about President Trump being like a Nebuchadnezzar. I've heard you say that before, and I think it may have been with Erwin Lutzer. I don't remember exactly.
Yes.
But I heard it said again this morning. So I guess my question is, if President Trump is doing things with God's hand on him, is there a possibility that God could remove his hand because he's had numerous chances to accept Christ as his Savior? I mean, there's people praying for him. I'm praying for him, and there are other people praying for him, but he's never acknowledged that I'm aware of. And it seems very obvious that he's not with the things that he posts, especially this past this week. So I guess my concern is there ever a time that God just gets to the point and just says, I've given you ample opportunity. I'm removing my hand from you. I want to add one thing because I have one very close to me, a daughter, and she's actually this past week, you know, some of the blasphemous things that came across here on some of the posts. I mean, they were just actually saying, if you don't have the Holy Spirit guiding you, how can you continue to run the country in a Bible way? And these are supporters. I mean, these are ones who have supported, you know, President Trump, you know, through the years. But there is some concern, and it's like he's a little unhinged about making some of these decisions. And, you know, is God's hand on him? Or can it be removed?
Rod, okay, so from Trump's perspective, posting that meme, I don't think he's thinking, I'm showing the world that I'm Jesus and I'm going to blaspheme God. I don't think he's thinking
that. He definitely doesn't think he's Jesus. No. But, you know, should he have posted it? No. Obviously not. Is there a risk to his soul of continuing in unbelief, assuming that he is an unbeliever? Of course there is. You don't know that your life won't be taken in this very hour. Right. So, and aside from that, yes, people absolutely can hit a point where there's no returning. Pharaoh did. So yes, if he has not repented his sins and turned to Christ and accepted his gracious offer of a substitutionary atonement, Christ's death on the cross in the place of our legitimate execution for all eternity for our treason against our King, the Lord our God, if he doesn't accept Christ's provision for him, then eternity is very bleak, no question about it. And time's a wasting. You got to get right there. Now, it's worth noting that our friend Jim Dobson, God rest his soul, was absolutely convinced that several years ago, Trump had accepted Christ. Jim told me repeatedly that he was in the room when it happened, that there were other people I know who could attest to this. And who am I to argue with Dr. Dobson? I mean, seriously? But I don't see the fruit on the tree.
I don't know
that he is. I would assume we should always pray for everybody we know, including our pastors. We have a friend, Jeff, who preached a revival up in North Carolina a few years ago, and two senior pastors right. came forward and got saved. So,
amen to that. Well, Rod, we're out of time. Thanks for listening to Real Truth for today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here with my friend Rod Martin talking about issues. Hey, pray for President Trump. He needs our prayers, and may God use us as Christians like Daniel, as God used Daniel in Nebuchadnezzar's life. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.